Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, April 21st. This is 2020. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Is it still 2020?
Yes. Cool. March was five of those years, if it feels like it's been a really long time. So that's why, cool. That's why we're a little off today.
Cool.
Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
In the words of the adults in the room, wah, 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 wah.
All right. It's going to be that kind of show, kids. Buckle up.
Yep.
Charlotte, I would like to start with you. You wrote an interesting article about the iMac and how it saved Apple.
Yeah, well, actually, I didn't particularly write an interesting article so much as I read one. It was a really lovely piece on Apple Insider by William Gallagher, which I shared on the Mac Observer. And it just really looked at how important the iMac, the original iMac, was in kind of saving Apple. We know about the importance of, was it the Mac 2 and the influence that had on Apple as a company. But the iMac kind of, it essentially saved Apple during one of its very darkest periods. And the reason I like this piece was because the iMac, the bright coloured, multicoloured iMac, is the first Apple device I really remember being conscious of back in 1999 at my school. And, you know, we all used to go into the IT lab and argue about which colour iMac we got to use which day and that kind of thing. And I just really remember that, me being aware of, that's the first time I was really aware properly of Apple products. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I wanted the strawberry raspberry pinky one. Obviously, that wasn't one of the original colors, but it's when you see pictures of the whole line, it's in there.
Yeah,
that's obviously the one I wanted. And I just thought it was a really nice piece, and it kind of makes you think quite what an innovative, in terms of both computing power and industrial design, device that was. And, you know, little things. I think I remember reading this in the Walter Isaacson biography of Steve Jobs, or, you know, even the handle on the top of the iMac was genius, because it gave it the sense of portability and lightweightness, even though it's nothing that we would recognize as being lightweight or portable in these days.
That's true.
Just all those little things are just so clever. And it's just a fascinating point in history that made a company.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I think of it, I think of the, I sort of think of that as the line where I sort of think about, there's like two in what I think of as like the modern iteration of Apple, and it's the iMac, and then when Tim Cook took over officially and was no longer interim. And those for me are like the two points of sort of modern era Apple, as opposed to sort of not really throwback Apple, but like previous Apple, which was beige machines and, you know, pizza boxes and Power Macs and clones and all that kind of stuff. How about you, Brian?
Well, I know that a lot of us tend to focus on this idea of the iMac saving Apple, but to me, that's not the interesting part of the story. And I know that longtime listeners of both the Apple Context Machine and this show, and perhaps Chuck Joyner's show, and maybe some other shows too, will have heard me talk about some aspects of this in the past. But the most interesting thing about the iMac to me is how Steve Jobs and the team that he assembled once he came back to Apple used this device to rewrite the rules by which Apple competed. Mm-hmm. And they made it look so easy that no one, I don't think Steve Jobs and said team gets anywhere near enough credit for this. Like, we all focus on the design aspects. We all focus on, like, you know, how the iMac, you know, dropped all the legacy ports.
Mm-hmm. No floppy drive.
no floppy drives. The Apple desktop bus was gone. You know, it was like USB only, and like we all focus on those things. And we've even talked. I know we talked certainly on the show a lot about how the design influence of the iMac permeated into industries all over the place. And I think we hit peak iMac when we had the Bondi Blue burger makers.
The
George Foreman grills.
The George Foreman grill.
Did that actually happen?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
There was a stretch where any store you went into, no matter what they sold, about 30-40% of it is the same stuff you could always buy, but now it was translucent blue plastic.
Yes.
Well, that's kind of interesting because now you see the same with Apple design. Obviously, the design of Apple devices now looks very different. It's cleaner, you know, white or black, you know, got that or the space gray kind of coloring, very clean coloring, totally different to the transparent, bright colored iMacs we're talking about. But actually, you see that totally influenced in other computing and other devices, even now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true. It was like I said, that we hit peak iMac
influence
with the George Foreman translucent blue grill. But Charlotte, I mean, we're talking irons, mixers. I mean, like
any store. I wasn't kidding.
Sorry, just so that your listeners don't think I was totally brain dead or totally unaware during this time. I was 11.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and like,
That's why I was interested in having this conversation with you today, is because, you know, for Kelly and I, certainly it's, you know, sort of we were there, and for you, it's much more of an academic discussion, and that brings a completely different perspective to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I say, it's the first Apple device, that and the Oyster Shell laptops.
Yeah.
Are the two Apple devices I really remember. And I think, first of all, if you're kind of 11, 12, and you see a brightly colored, shiny computer with the funny shaped mouse, the round mouse. Mm-hmm. How cool was that? That's going to catch your eye. You're going to be excited. But I also remember thinking, maybe I'm over contextualizing this, but you sort of had an awareness that maybe it wasn't a serious computer in the same way the kind of black PC in your parents' home office was.
Yeah. Well, that certainly continued for
ages,
for a very, very long time. But that sort of ties back into what I was saying, in that the computer world competition, the computer industry, was defined by lower prices and faster performance. And the entire industry was on this race to the bottom, where the only companies after Apple made this change, there were essentially three companies in the PC world making money, making a profit, a real profit. It was Microsoft, it was Intel, and it was Apple.
Right.
And Apple wasn't using Intel at that time.
Right.
And
no.
Apple changed almost overnight the basis upon which it was competing, and it went away from price and megahertz to style and experience and lifestyle, I should say, lifestyle and experience and, sort of a perceived value. Mm-hmm. And this is remarkable. Like I said, Apple made it look so easy, and it just sort of happened so fast that to me, there should be PhDs being built on, like, you know, how Apple did this, and it should be the subject of the, you know, one of the greatest business turnarounds of all time. I mean, Apple changed the rules by which it competed, and it took like 7 months from release to it being effective, and that is astounding. It is astounding.
Mm-hmm. As the article I referenced on the Mac Observer yesterday highlights, it took less than a year to sell 5 million units, to ship 5 million units. Mm-hmm. Which, astounding is exactly the right word, Byron. Especially for then, absolutely.
Well, even now, for somebody to sell 5 million of something is no small feat. Like, 5 million of a thing that's
yeah, but
like
Apple
a
sells five million
Apple, yes, but I'm talking about like in general, like for that to be a thing. If you were not Apple and you sold 5 million of anything in that amount of time, it would be impressive, period.
Can I just ask, and you guys can tell me if from your memories of the time, because I know the color caught my eye, but do you think if they, and I appreciate I'm again looking rather superficially at something which you're right has a much more wider business context, but do you think Apple had to make something that was literally in terms of appearance so bold to kind of stand out from the gray matte PCs that everyone else was making?
Yeah, that was part of changing the rules. That was I mean, like Apple wouldn't have been able to change the rules in the way it did if it didn't also have the design aesthetic that so put Apple apart. I mean, but there are multiple aspects of that. There is the ditching of all the legacy ports. There's the ditching of the legacy technologies like the floppy drive. I mean, Charlotte, you may not remember this, but I mean, people talked about how useless the iMac was because it didn't have a freaking floppy drive.
Oh, I totally remember that. Yeah. I remember us having this issue at school where we, you know, maybe you want to take some homework you were doing in the computer lab home, and there's no floppy drive to take it, be able to transfer your little text document. I totally remember that.
So it is a remarkable story. It was a remarkable device. And it also, when I mentioned that there were three companies making money in the PC world at the time, making real money. And Dell was making some money too, but they were like, they were already heading down and just didn't know it. LOL to, let's give a shout out to Michael Dell. Saying that if he was Apple CEO, that he would, you know, sell the company off and return the money to shareholders. How's that working out for you, Mr. Dell? And
Brian, play nicely.
No, I'm not going to play nicely. I cannot stand
not with
that
Michael
guy.
Dell.
I cannot stand that company. Cannot stand the things that they. Okay, so but the other aspect of that is that it also set Apple up to make enough of a return to be able to invest in new technologies and concepts. And the iPod would not, Apple would not have been able to design and build or contract out the iPod were it not for the profits that were started from the iMac and then the iBook. Right. And from the iPod, you know, comes everything else too. Apple, there were again three companies that were making enough money to do research into new technologies: Microsoft, Intel, and Apple. And, you know, Dell is making enough money, but all of their R&D went into like how to use one less screw in making a computer in order to save, you know, a quarter of a penny. So it was incredibly important. The iPhone doesn't happen without the iMac. The iPod doesn't happen without the iMac. The iPad doesn't happen without the iMac. The Apple Watch doesn't happen without the iMac. All the iMac set Apple up for all of the things that followed.
Yeah, and look, we even have even the kind of brightly colored iPhone XR that I'm looking at, and like you say, and back to the point about the ports you're making, you know, we often when you don't or do not have on an Apple device, and yet normally they turn out to be right and we get what have what we need.
Well, I think part
I'm
of
gonna
what
have some angry letters about that, aren't I? Should not
it's okay.
mention the ports and dongles.
Observations at MacObserver.com is where you can send all of that. I think for me, part of why I think of this as sort of the version of Apple that we have now is because this is one of those times where, Brian, like you're talking about, they fundamentally changed the rules of the game. And part of changing that was what it means to be a computer. Like what it looks, what a computer that's in your house looks like. And then they did it again with what a computer in your pocket looks like.
And look at the advertising campaign. I shared a video today. Look at the advertising campaign for the iPad Pro.
Yeah.
It's building on that theme, isn't it?
Yeah. And what it means, like what technology can mean to your life and what sort of impact it has, like, is kind of a separate discussion. But what it looks like, because everybody sort of thought it had to look like the thing you had at work, that big black industrial slab, that beige slab that lived under your desk and hooked up to either a black or a beige CRT display on your desk. And it had a giant bezel and it was massive and it was ugly. And this was translucent. And the blue of the initial iMac was really nice. And the next wave that came with the DVD player in it, which came with a copy of A Bug's Life, by the way, I know because I think I still have my copy somewhere. it also, again, like, it changed what a computer was supposed to look like that was in your house or in your life. And I think that's like, the first time Apple did that. The second time Apple did that was with the phone. Like, they changed what it meant for there to be a computer in your life because this computer fits in your pocket. You know, and we found out later, a billion pockets, y'all, according to Oprah. So that's another time, another way that Apple has sort of changed the rules, and there wouldn't be the mobile revolution as we know it today, where everybody's got one of these in their pockets of whatever flavor it is, if it hadn't been for that one. And it wouldn't be for the iPhone, like you said, Brian, if it weren't for the iMac.
Yeah, stopping the race to the bottom is a huge thing. It's one of the reasons why I get so cranky with Amazon. and it's one of the reasons why I get so cranky about the publishing industry and Amazon's impact on the publishing industry. But yes, in every industry that Amazon ends up entering, there's a race to the bottom where profits go away and quality inevitably follows.
Yes.
And Apple stopped that in the PC world. Like I think most of us probably forget there was a long period of time where individual PC companies would introduce new technologies that weren't necessarily standards, but actually made their computers more interesting or useful or powerful or whatever. Mm-hmm. And at some point that stopped as everything centered around industry standards. And we hit that race to the bottom where quality goes out the window and everybody is just looking at price and then performance where they can get it. And Apple changing, it is astounding. It is amazing. It is significant. And I really don't think that Apple gets anywhere near enough credit for Steve Jobs and his team to get anywhere near enough credit for that.
I agree. I think part of that is that it worked, right? It's not like they took a shot at it and it failed. It was the amount of success that they had with that. And where that ultimately led, you know, between the iMac and the iBook, the oyster shell, clamshell, Hello Kitty purse, I heard it characterized as more than once.
I so wanted one of those.
I did so bad. Not because people thought it looked like a Hello Kitty purse, but I just thought it was super portable because it had this really awesome feature where there was this new thing called Wi-Fi and you could hook your computer to it without any Ethernet or anything, if you wanted to. If you had that option, it was available, and it was mind-blowing.
Another shout-out to Michael Dell for claiming to have the first laptop with built-in Wi-Fi roughly 9 months after Apple had already done it. But, you know, whatever. That's cool, bro.
Cool story, bro.
Yeah, exactly. One other thing there, too, is we also need to give a little shout-out to a little company called Microsoft for helping to save Apple.
Yes, absolutely.
Microsoft gave Apple the time to deploy the iMac and rewrite the rules when Bill Gates agreed to invest some money in Apple and B, commit to having Office be back on the Mac.
And also, indeed. So Johnny Ives obviously designed the iMac. He's one of ours. You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks.
Yep. All right. Well, terribly interesting. If you had an iMac, one of these initial sort of gumdrop iMacs, mine was blueberry. I wanted grape, but nobody could ever get one for me. And so eventually I broke down and bought the blueberry one. If you had one, and if you have any particular memories about it that you want to share with us, like I said earlier, observations@MacObserver.com. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. Thank you both so much for being here today. Brian, thank you for coming by.
Yep, thanks for having us.
I always like to get your perspective on stuff like this. And Charlotte, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for the walk down memory lane. I enjoyed it.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. Hopefully I'll talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.